to the court. We have two cases today. The first one is United States versus Bass. Lieutenant Kane Cruz, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes.
And Lieutenant Parker, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, sir.
Very well then, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Lieutenant Maggie Kane Cruz, and I represent Gunnery Sergeant Bass. Chief Judge, I request 3 minutes for a rebuttal, please.
Granted.
Lieutenant Cruz, could you just speak up a little bit? We're getting a little bit of reverb, so if you speak louder, it'll... All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. This court has recognized we have to hold the government to its burden and guard against improper uses of positive urinalysis results. That did not happen in this case for two reasons. First, the military judge erred by admitting prior ingestion to rebut a general denial. Second, he improperly relied on the permissive inference to find appellant knowingly used a product that is publicly available.
Before you get started, I'd like to jump to the end of this. On page 17 of your brief, you say, quote, "For these reasons, this court should set aside appellant's convictions with prejudice." Now, assume for a moment that this court were to agree with you in terms of the disposition of the issues. Why would we dismiss it with prejudice rather than set aside the findings and authorize a rehearing? Or is that a typo?
Your Honor, I have not contemplated that exact question. I don't have a case to support with prejudice. However, due to the Kerr factors, there was prejudice, and that would be our request. But if this court finds there's reason to send it back, then, of course, that would be the appropriate conclusion.
Could I ask you this? Not that I'm an appellate procedural expert or anything, but... Isn't there an argument in this case that if you prevail, that this is akin to a sufficiency of proof issue? And in, when the evidence is insufficient, that's an occasion in which the court dismisses with prejudice. Is there an argument to be made there? Or no?
Yes,
and I'm asking genuinely. I'm not trying to say I think that, but I'm just asking.
Yes, Your Honor. There is an argument there. At the CCA, this issue was raised under the factual sufficiency assignment of error. That's how it fit in for both the permissive inference and the 404B issue.
Mm-hmm. We didn't intend to throw you off your game. Please proceed.
Yes, Chief Judge.
Actually, I did.
Turning to the first issue, Graham, Tyndall, and subsequent cases have nuance to them. But one thing they are clear on, Tyndall did not overrule Graham. A prior ingestion alone cannot rebut a general denial. And 404B evidence in drug cases must either rebut or impeach the accused's defense. Here, in the beginning of appellant's trial, the military judge makes his first 404B ruling at Joint Appendix 48. He grants their motion, and he quotes, to quote, "However, if the defense raises a defense of innocent ingestion or mistake or accident, then it may reconsider." An appellant relied on this ruling. At Joint Appendix 60, his defense counsel states, "We have relied on this ruling in the specific wording from the military judge." So he's the gatekeeper at that point. If he testifies or has a fact witness in his case in chief put on an innocent ingestion defense, then the government can present the 404B.
But can't the accused in any case put on a defense without testifying there? The accused doesn't have to testify in order to put up a defense to what the charge is against him, does he?
Yes, Your Honor. He could have a fact witness testify on his behalf, like what happened what happens in cases with an innocent ingestion where a spouse put in a prohibited substance.
So, I'm sorry, counsel, I didn't want to cut you off. Were you finished at the answering Judge Sparks?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mine is a follow-on. So I think this is where your argument is going. So RCM 701B2 requires an accused, if they're going to raise the innocent ingestion defense, to notify the government. So that did not occur here. So are you saying that by virtue of the fact that they did not notify for innocent ingestion, that defense, or at least that as a theory, was not raised?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, that is a contributing factor, the fact that there was never notice, specifically per RCM 701B2, where the defense has to provide written notice to the government outlining what the defense of innocent ingestion is, providing those facts and the names of the witness who will testify.
But going back then to Judge Sparks' question, was innocent ingestion mistake raised as part of the defense theory of the case? Okay. In the opening, defense counsel proffers this idea of innocent ingestion. During the cross-examination of the government expert, they specifically asked about innocent ingestion, and then their own rebuttal witness expert, again, in advising or opining on the level, said that it would be consistent with an innocent ingestion. So did not defense at least have a theory of innocent ingestion, even if they did not comply with 701B2?
No, Your Honor. For multiple reasons. For the opening, the defense counsel broadcast the evidence, and he was adamant that the government would not be able to prove the knowledge requirement. During the cross-examination, again, the defense conducted the standard cross seen in virtually every ADCEP and drug or prohibited substance drug use trial. He crossed the government's expert to confirm that the results themselves can't determine the route of exposure. They can't rule out unknowing ingestion. But again, that's the results. That's what the results can show. What he didn't do, like in Tyndale, he didn't have a fact witness testify regarding the specific circumstances that led to the positive result. And that's what the innocent ingestion defense centers on, the facts, not the results, not the fact that you popped positive. It's what led to that pop. And
so if I understand what you're saying about this issue of whether or not the defense of innocent ingestion was raised or not, you're saying that, hey, look, this was a general denial, if you want to call that a defense. He simply was denying the charge against him and pointing out those aspects of the government's case that were weak enough to show that they couldn't prove the offense against him.
And like Graham, in Graham it is similar, but however, this court still found in Graham that the appellant provided a general denial, and that's even with him testifying and stating, I would never knowingly use drugs. And here, he didn't testify at all. And so I'd like to also move on and discuss the doctrine of chances. So here, Tyndale came after Graham, and Tyndale provided the doctrine of chances applies only to sufficiently similar fact patterns that contribute to the truth-finding process. And we're comparing the facts from the subsequent court-martial to the first court-martial. In this case, is unlike Tyndale because there are no similarities between the prior court-martial and the subsequent court-martial here because there was no innocent ingestion defense. There were no similar facts. In Tyndale, this court went through the pains of writing bullet points to compare the similarities between the first court-martial and the subsequent. And even with all those similarities, the court still found it was a close call. Pending any other questions from the court?
I do have one other question. Maybe the government is more equipped to answer this question, but this naval instruction here, is this just the Navy, or do the other services have a similar instruction?
Your Honor, I did not look specifically into that.
I didn't either. That's why I'm asking
fact.
You.
But the ALNAV for the Navy, it identifies the, at the time, the DOD instruction that required the services to publish a order regarding prohibited hemp products. So it's not in our briefs, but...
And I'm not asking you to testify. I thought
right.
maybe
I'm,
you
I'm
had
sure
come across.
There are similarities for the other services prohibiting the hemp products mm-hmm. to align with the DOD instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, counsel. Before you move on, could you please address a point that Judge Johnson made before with respect to the opening argument and the cross-examination? In both of those cases, they didn't use the term innocent ingestion. They used the term unknowing ingestion. Is there a difference there? Is that significant? The government's principal point is that appellant did raise an innocent ingestion defense, and they cite those two passages, but they don't really say innocent, they say unknowing, and I just want to know what your view on that was.
Your Honor, unknowing and innocent, there could be a situation where they are the same, and in that situation it would be where there's a fact witness that testifies or the accused themselves testifies about the circumstances. In that case, if the words are just interchanged, that would be okay because the underlying circumstances fully explain what led up to the results. But in this case, we don't have any of that. We have just the defense stating unknowing. So in this case, the use of the term unknowing is not the same as the affirmative defense for innocent ingestion.
So in other words, it's a general denial by saying the government can't prove knowing. Other not innocent ingestion, just the government can't prove knowing. Is that your argument?
Correct, Your Honor. With nothing more, that is a general denial.
Counsel, I just want to make this clear. Is it what would be sufficient to raise a innocent ingestion affirmative defense? Do you have to point to a specific? Do you have to present a theory? This is how it might have ended up in my system. Do you have to point to a specific event? You know, I went to this party and there were things being taken. You know, is that what it takes to put it on the table to move from just a general denial in your view to an affirmative defense of an innocent ingestion?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's drawing both from the RCM notice requirement and cases such as Roan, where this court, even though it wasn't a 404B issue, however, this court did state the accused need only to point to a potential source, and in that case, it was the protein powder. And in Brewer, the accused could suggest possible explanation. So there you're explaining the circumstances. I ate a brownie or, you know, went to a party, that sort of thing. I'd like to turn to the second issue regarding the permissive inference. There was error here because the permissive inference is not in the ALNAV, and its application to non-controlled substances is not feasible because these products are widely available and legal. Turning to the ALNAV, it's noticeably absent. Article 112 Alpha's permissive inference was a judicial creation and then codified in the statute and upheld in Ford. Neither SECNAV, Secretary of the Navy, or the President has acted in the 6 years roughly that the ALNAV has been published to incorporate Article 112's specific permissive inference into the ALNAV itself. So intentional or not, this court should not read into the ALNAV what's not there. And that's consistent with Taylor.
On that point, the ALNAV actually seems to me to have a built-in knowledge element in it, right? Which, in other words, I think you have to have knowledge that you have ingested a hemp product, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's paragraph 4.
As opposed to knowledge that you have ingested THC 8 or whatever it is.
Yes.
Is that a distinction that's worthwhile noting?
Yes, Your Honor. It's an important distinction, mainly because the THC 8 positive result hinges on ingesting, under the ALNAV, a commercially available hemp as opposed to synthetic hemp. And that was also part of defense's argument, where they claimed the government's expert could not testify and provide evidence that the prohibited hemp product allegedly used by Gunnery Sergeant Bass was a commercial hemp product that's prohibited by the ALNAV, unlike a synthesized product that's created differently.
Now, when the military judge used or employed the permissive inference, I think he mentioned that he was applying the inference to both wrongfulness and knowledge. But what kind of knowledge was he using to rely on the inference? Was it knowledge of ingestion of THC or knowledge of ingestion of a hemp product? In other words, was he using the urinalysis to infer that the accused had in fact ingested a hemp product?
Your Honor, I would have to look back at the special findings where he states that he's using it. And at the moment, I can't remember if he's actually, if he even says hemp or THC-8.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize my time is ending, but the Ford logic hinges on the fact that service members have limited access to controlled substances, and people generally know what they put in their bodies. And that predicate fact does not apply to non-controlled substances that are available and could be mislabeled.
Any questions further from the bench? Seeing none, thank you, Lieutenant Kane Cruz. Lieutenant Park.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Matt Parker, and along with Colonel Ian Pedden, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the findings and sentence for two reasons. First, the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he admitted appellant's prior positive urinalyses for THC-8 and his prior court-martial testimony as 404B evidence for absence of mistake and lack of accident. And second, the military judge did not err in applying the permissive inference in this case. Turning to this first point, this court in United States v. Tyndale recognized that this court is, quote, consistently held that MRE 404B is a rule of inclusion, and that the ultimate touchstone of admissibility is whether that evidence is indicative of something other than the accused's predisposition to commit crimes. And here, the evidence that trial counsel offered was three prior positive urinalyses for THC-8 and the accused's testimony that testing positive previously for THC-8 had a monumental effect on him as he realized his career was almost going to get flushed down the drain. And that evidence was offered not for propensity, but as a piece of notice getting to absence of mistake. And so this court in Tyndale gave us a Reynolds gave us this three-pronged test to evaluate that admissibility. An appellant does not contest this first element, so I'll turn to the second element in this case, and that's whether it makes a fact of consequence more or less probable. And as the lower court noted in its opinion, the fact of consequence here is whether ingestion was knowing or unknowing. And I think looking at this court's decisions in United States v. Thompson, United States v. Harrow, and United States v. Ford tells us why this evidence is indicative and useful for notice. So first, looking at Thompson, in that case, the appellant was convicted of using marijuana for testing positive for THC-9. And in Thompson, the military judge admitted appellant statements that he used to use marijuana, quote, all the time back home. And the military judge admitted that evidence for absence of mistake. But this court reversed because appellant actually never contested knowledge or brought knowledge into issue. In fact, the accused's defense in that case was a defense of duress and that he challenged the credibility of the government witnesses. So what this court said in Thompson is that, quote, because the matters for which the military judge admitted the uncharged acts were not at issue, that evidence served no relevant purpose and fails the second prong of the Reynolds test. But here, appellant forecasted both in its opening and then in its cross-examination of the government expert absolutely raised the issue of knowledge. And what you see in the opening, you can see
how
this.
Do you distinguish, Lieutenant Parker, the appellate defense counsel's point in the conversation that she and I had just a moment ago about the issue of knowledge? I mean, what kind of knowledge are we talking about? In other words, the judge admitted this on the issue of knowledge. That's one question. And then on the issue of what defense, if any, is raised and how it's raised, what is your response to the general denial argument that she has just made?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's two questions. I hated to combine them, but I mean that's
– Yes.
I'll forget about the other one if I don't do it now.
Yes, Your Honor. So to your first point, I think what you see from the military judge's special findings is that he used the circumstantial evidence and the evidence from both the government's forensic expert and the defense expert that basically rendered the idea that this THC could have come from marijuana or from synthetically derived sources speculative and fanciful. And he found that because, as the government expert testified, if someone derives the THC content from marijuana, it's going to cause positive results for THC-9 as well, and that didn't happen in this case. And as to the synthetically derived CBD, both the government expert and the defense expert testified that it'd be financially unreasonable in light of the fact that you now had access to these now legalized hemp products. It'd be unreasonably considered and financially unfeasible to try to synthetically derive CBD to create THC-8 when you had access to it.
I'll say, counsel, I just want to make sure then, because this goes back to Judge Sparks' question about what kind of knowledge, and his question to defense appellate, which was knowledge of hemp, ingestion of hemp, or knowledge that of ingestion of something that's going to cause him to have a positive urinalysis for THC-8. So based upon your answer, I think you're saying that it was the knowledge of the hemp, that he was using a hemp product.
It was, yes, Your Honor, I think it's a combination of the military judge using the evidence from the forensic and defense expert that in all likelihood it would have come from CBD derived from hemp. And so I think he uses that evidence to kind of get to that knowledge piece and then attaches the permissive inference to further support that knowledge and wrongfulness element. And then, Judge Sparks, to your second point about whether this evidence actually raised it. So first I would point to the Joint Appendix opening statement at page 57, where they say that the forensic expert, who had 40 years of experience in forensic chemistry and urinalysis test results, would testify that these urinalysis results were consistent with unknowing ingestion, which I think is a stronger statement than just saying that the government can't prove knowledge. And then in the evidence that they obtained from the government expert on cross-examination, it talked about how these products could be mislabeled, and so I think that's evidence that supports unknowing ingestion. And evidence that supports a defense theory is sufficient to allow the prosecution to rebut it, and that's what this court says in United States v. Harrow. So what happened in United States v. Harrow, which I'll also note, Thompson and Harrow both came after Graham and Tyndale. And so what happened in Harrow is that defense argued on appeal that they didn't specifically argue accident, and so the government shouldn't have been allowed to introduce 404B evidence of lack of accident. But Harrow rejected that argument, and what Harrow said is that while the appellant did not specifically argue accident, the evidence at trial, quote, supported an argument that the injuries might have been accidentally inflicted. The prosecution was entitled to rebut such an argument. And so the evidence here supported an argument of unknowing ingestion, even if not specifically argued by appellant in this case.
Does the government believe that in one of these cases, a defendant could ever make a general denial without raising the question of accidental ingestion?
So 2 points to that, Your Honor. First, the government's position is that a general denial, if they don't affirmatively disclaim an intent, opens up the door for this type of evidence if it has a if it meets the other prongs of 404B. And that's because this Court in Harrow specifically cites to the Supreme Court decision in Estelle v. McGuire. And this Court in Harrow, in talking about Estelle, said the Supreme Court, examining this same question, unequivocally determined that evidence of intent and lack of accident may be admitted regardless of whether a defendant argues lack of intent, because every element of a crime must be proven by the prosecution. And so Harrow recognized this proposition that, quote, a simple plea of not guilty puts the prosecution to its proof as to all elements of the crime charged. And if you just quickly review the lower court's decision, they talk about a number of federal circuits who admit 404B evidence in a similar case. And just in those cited cases alone, the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 11th circuits all invoke this principle that a simple plea of not guilty puts the prosecution to its case.
I mean, just to be clear, I think the answer to your question is no, right? It's the government's position that previous drug pops are basically always going to be admissible under 403B because it refutes knowledge and intent.
No, Your Honor, they're not always going to be
admissible. Can you think of any circumstance when it wouldn't be?
So in a
If the government is drawing a line between when it would be admissible and when it wouldn't, I don't know what that line is.
So
it sounds like you're saying if you're going to deny you took it, then it's always going to be admissible.
So I would say trial counsel still has to establish the relevancy of that evidence to its position in this case. And here, the government would stress that we're not trying to separate the previous positive year analyses with the testimony about the impact that this had on him and the fact that this fourth positive year analysis came 6 days after the court-martial.
Well, how, talking about that evidence, that it was monumental, right? That's the evidence. How was that relevant?
Your Honor, I think it's helpful if you look at United States v. Graham, which was an instance where they found it not relevant and not helpful.
Right. Well, that's so great. I still don't know how he said this was a monumental thing. Yeah, he got court-martialed. I imagine in any service member's career, that's a very monumental thing. As he said, his whole career could have been flushed down the drain. But what was he supposed to do differently in his life going forward based off that evidence that we could now say, well, you should have known. Like before, we've had people who said they experimented with marijuana. There's something clear in their life they could change. I take it the government's position is, well, going through that first court martial, he should have known. You got to make some changes, and you didn't. Now we're going to court martial you. But what changes was he supposed to make? Like what happened at that first court martial that demonstrated, hey, there's this thing you're doing, you got to stop doing that, or this is going to happen again?
So to that point, Your Honor, I would note that defense does cross-examine the government's expert who sat through that prior trial, and there was a conversation between defense counsel and the government witness about THC-8 gummies and how that may have, what context that may have arisen. And in that case, the government expert had said that she didn't actually test those gummies. But I would point to this court's decision in United States v. Ford, which explicitly states that this idea of notice reduces the possibility of innocent ingestion. And then in Graham, where it found the prior positive year analysis from 4 years, not logically relevant to surprise, found that that wasn't consistent with human experience. But I think here it's consistent with human experience to say that if you've tested positive 3 previous times for THC-8 and you recognize the impact that having ingested THC-8 almost had on your career and that those were monumental days for you, I think it is consistent with human experience to say that you're going to evaluate your behavior and make some changes. And so,
do what? I mean, we have the innocent ingestion, as Judge Hardy is referring to, where it would seem as if the message is you don't ingest anything that someone has given you that may contain THC. Here, let's assume for a moment that the defense here was purely, I have no idea how THC got into my system. It comes down to a question of what's the fact of consequence that's important to this case in terms of saying previously I tested positive, innocent ingestion, I mistakenly did so, for the defense in this case of saying I have no idea how it got into my system. What's the fact of consequence that the prior positive year analysis is important for this case?
So the fact of consequence here, Your Honor, is whether or not the accused knowingly or unknowingly ingested these products. And this evidence was offered for the limited purpose of notice that it would be consistent with human experience. And looking at Ford, it says people, as a matter of self-preservation, are generally aware of what they consume. And defense counsel talked with the government expert about THC 8 gummies. And so for the limited purpose of notice, it reduces the possibility of absence of mistake, which is a proposition that Ford supports, in combination with the fact that Ford supports that an appellant generally knows what they put into their body.
I mean, all of these rules that the court has created around this are in the context of controlled substances, right? Where it, I think the court has always just presumed, come on, you've got a controlled substance in the body. You probably really know how it got there, or you probably know what circumstance put you in danger of having that in your system. Now we're dealing with an uncontrolled substance, and that presumption that you're going to know, or you probably are going to know how it got in your body, doesn't really seem to apply. Does any of this really make sense when we're dealing with a non-controlled substance?
I think so, Your Honor, because looking at United States v. Ford, Ford recognized that in that case marijuana was legal in certain civilian jurisdictions, but it ultimately disclaimed that, finding that because it was prohibited in the military, to a military service member, it is contraband. And both the government expert and defense expert testified that they had never come across commercially available products that weren't labeled at all. In fact, the government expert testified that the labeling tended to be open and obvious, and that any issues in mislabeling had to do with the actual specific content or the fact that maybe a product labeled as CBD could contain THC-9. And so to a military service member, CBD is contraband. And here, where both experts testify that they've never come across commercially available products that weren't labeled, and you have an accused who is on notice after testing positive 3 separate times, going through the court-martial process and testifying about its impact, as well as the evidence raised in cross-examination, this discussion of THC gummies, I think it does reduce the possibility of unknowing ingestion. And since service members are on notice through the ALNAV, and this service member had individualized notice, looking at Ford, CBD is contraband, and this accused, this appellant, who is on this individualized notice, reduces the likelihood even further of unknowing ingestion, especially where this fourth-year analysis comes just 6 days after the court-martial wraps up. And so I think this issue of notice is still consistent with human experience as opposed to something like Graham. And so that's why this court should find the military judge didn't abuse his discretion in finding that the second prong was met. And turning briefly to this third prong, whether the evidence, whether its probative value is substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice, here, I would highlight that this was a military judge-alone case. We presume that military judges know the law and apply the law. And here, the military judge's special findings reflect that he considered this evidence for the limited purpose of notice. And so where you have a military judge-alone who's able to weigh a non-propensity purpose against the potential for propensity, this court should have reduced concerns that a military judge would be unable to conduct that balancing test. And now turning to the question of the permissive inference, as this court in Ford stated, a permissive inference in military law has long been considered no more than a well-recognized use of circumstantial evidence. And this court in Harper found that there is a rational connection between contraband drug use and wrongfulness that has been recognized for many years in military law. And so the military context and environment where we're talking about this is particularly important.
And so Let me stop you for just a minute here, Lieutenant Parker. As I mentioned earlier in my conversation with appellate defense counsel, I think, I guess I'm troubled, or at least confused, maybe I should say, the fact that this ALNAV has this built-in knowledge requirement. And it seems to me that if the military judge is allowed to use the permissive inference that because, and the inference is coming solely from the fact that there's been a positive year analysis. Do you agree with me on that point?
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's the case, then does the government ever have to prove the knowledge requirement contained in the ALNAV? I mean, if the military judge can just infer it or assume it away, isn't that relieving the government of having to prove an element of the offense, which is unique to this case because this is not the use of a controlled substance. This is the use of a substance that the Secretary of the Navy, or his or her subordinates, has decided that we're going to prohibit the use of hemp products. But you have to have specific knowledge that you are, in fact, consuming or ingesting a hemp product. So if the government doesn't have to prove that, and the judge can simply infer it away, why isn't that a problem? I mean, it's a problem to me, but I might be wrong.
So, Your Honor, I would say I don't know that that was just inferred away in this instance. I believe the judge in his special findings does rely on the expert testimony from both the government and the defense expert.
Right, but all they're saying basically is that the accused had a positive urine analysis. These were the levels. This is the indication that that THC-9 was present in the system. But as the accused, during his case in chief and his cross-examination pointed out, none of that goes to his knowledge that he had consumed a hemp product. And that's, my guess is that's partly why the military judge decided that he was going to use the permissible inference to, I hate to say it, but fill in the blanks. But in every case in, like this, under this ALNAV, can't the military judge that do that in every case? Every time someone is charged under this ALNAV, can't the military judge, at least under the government's point, or government's perspective, can't the military judge simply infer, based on the fact that the accused has had a positive urine analysis, that he has knowledge, he had knowledge that he had ingested a hemp product?
I'm not sure that the government could, Your Honor, and here I would point to, I believe it's paragraph 9 of the special findings, and I don't think the military judge solely relies on the permissive inference to reach a conclusion that this was CBD derived from hemp. There's expert testimony from
No, but that's my point. I don't think the judge is saying, hey, look, this is, apparently you have THC-8 or whatever it is in your system, according to this urine analysis, and the expert who evaluated the results of the urine analysis. But the judge is still left with the requirement under the ALNAV that the knowledge requirement must be that you had knowledge that you had, in fact, ingested a hemp product. Now, because that there's no evidence of that, it looks to me, as I read the record, and I can read, but I can't read very fast. But it seems to me that the judge filled in the blank. In other words, since there's no evidence that the accused knew he was ingesting a hemp product, I'm going to use the permissive inference on the issue of knowledge. And my question, or what's bothering me, is that if the military judge can do that in every case where someone is charged under this ALNAV, why doesn't that simply relieve the government of having to prove an element of the offense?
Your Honor, I see my time has expired.
Please respond to Judge Spark.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the military judge relied on this testimony that CBD derived from hemp from the expert in defense. Both established that that's the most common way that this is going to be produced and that it'd be unrealistic to expect synthetically derived CBD due to the availability of legally available hemp products, and there was no positive test result for THC-9. So I believe the military judge solely used a well-recognized use of circumstantial evidence to rule out those possibilities and then applied the permissive inference.
Okay, so that's your answer to my question. I appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Judge Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Judge. Now, I was thinking another way of asking kind of that same question. So as you have repeatedly cited to Ford, in Ford, we discussed the rationale behind the permissive inferences in the context of the wrongful use of marijuana. So you still have that knowing prong in the Article 112 offense. So is there a reason, or what is the government's position, why using the permissive inference to prove that knowledge element in a 112 is, I hate to say permissible, but I'll say okay, is okay in this Article 92 context. It's just a different way of asking the same question. You're using a permissive inference in both instances to prove the knowledge element, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, I would say.
Okay, so it's the government's position that the knowledge element is the knowledge element, and it doesn't matter whether it's a 112 or a 92 because of the way the ONAV is written.
The government's position is that you can use the permissive inference to reach both those, both knowledge and wrongfulness.
Okay.
Any further questions? Judge Maggs?
Yes, I have a question. I think both you and appellant agree that a permissible inference is proper only if it's rational, if there's a logical connection between what is being inferred and the facts from which it's being inferred. Appellant says in its brief that this permissive inference is not rational for three reasons. One, these hemp products are widely available. They're in all sorts of things. Two, they're not labeled properly, or not always labeled properly. And three, you don't feel any effect in your body, so you don't know whether you have them or not. And for this reason, while it might be rational under 112A, it's not rational when you're talking about hemp. What's the government's response to this specific argument that this is not rational given these differences between hemp and marijuana?
The government would point to the factors in Ford, and essentially under Ford, the first factor about marijuana being contraband, even though it's legal in civilian jurisdictions, should still have persuasive force as it is banned in the military, thus it is contraband. And Harper recognizes a rational connection between, quote, contraband drug use and wrongfulness. And that second, notice, as the court in Ford said, reduces the possibility of unknowing ingestion. And here you have an ONAV, which does put the military service members on notice. And that, for the physiological effects, the government expert testified both during direct and cross-examination that it had psychoactive effects. It's just slightly less potent than THC-9. And so there are psychoactive effects. And so what Ford says is that where there might be physiological effects, a failure to satisfactorily explain the source of this, increases the possibility that this was knowing use. And then finally, as a matter of self-preservation, an accused is generally aware of what they consume. And the government expert here testified that CBD products like this are typically ingested. And so those factors in Ford still should have persuasive force in considering a banned product. And that the question of mislabeling, again, both experts testified they'd never come across products that weren't labeled at all and were commercially available. And any issues in mislabeling or not labeling could absolutely be raised by the accused in a particular case, but that shouldn't eradicate a rational connection between contraband drug use and wrongfulness in the military context.
Any further questions from the bench? Lieutenant Park, you may briefly conclude.
For these two reasons, Your Honors, this court should affirm the findings and sentence. Thank you.
Lieutenant Kane Cruz.
Your Honors, the military judge did infer the knowledge requirement away. Joint Appendix 243, he found in paragraph 14, there was no evidence presented that anyone had ever seen the accused possess or use a product made or derived from hemp, and the government relied on the permissive inference. In paragraph 17, he states he did find, to answer Judge Sparks' question, that he used a product made or derived by him. I would like to clarify as well, the government's expert at Joint Appendix 125 stated she could not opine on the psychological effects for appellant's results. Also, regarding the 404B, The prior use centered on THC-8 gummies. The government never proved they were a hemp product, and that lowers the probative value and relevance for the subsequent court-martial. Regarding the government's argument that Harrow and Estelle apply, The court may use that case law. However, Graham and Tyndall is the battlefield here. This court has been clear when it comes to drug cases, unlike Harrow, that was a murder case and child abuse, drug cases are different. The 404B either rebuts or impeaches. So that's the universe we're in. And if this court can use those cases to draw the line, and the line here is the defense had a general denial. There was not an innocent injunction defense raised. If the line were to be, as the government suggests, that a mere opening that forecasts the government's weaknesses or cross-examination of an expert, that prohibits that means an innocent injunction is raised, that would be going too far. That would basically preclude the government from testing the government, the defense from testing the government's strength of their case. Turning to the permissive inference, in Ford, the last sentence in that decision states, our holding today is simply we find no constitutional violation of findings of guilty for wrongful marijuana based on the permissive inference, based on such a record. Here, that record does not exist. Ford was based off of marijuana, and at the time, the nanogram limit in Graham, it was 300 nanograms. Today, it's 15 nanograms, and it makes sense to infer a permissive inference because there you might feel the physiological effects.
Any questions from the bench? Seeing none, thank you. Case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand in recess until 10:30.
Court stands in recess until 10:30.